The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome one, welcome all. Greatest show of them all. It is the NFC East mixtape presented to you through a four-way partnership from all of SB Nation's NFC East team blog podcast networks. That is Bleeding Green Nation for Philadelphia Eagles coverage, Blogging the Voice for Dallas Cowboys, Big Blue View for those New York football Giants, and Hogs Haven for the Washington Commanders. You can listen to this show on any one of those platforms. As mentioned, you can also watch us on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel or the Blogging the Boys YouTube channel. I say us. My name is RJ Ochoa from Blogging the Boys. His name is Brandon Lee Gowton from Bleeding Green Nation. Did you have a strobe light? Is that what that was? I wasn't really paying attention.
What is flashlight. That? It was trying to distract you. Yeah.
It was red. That's not a flashlight.
And then now it's red. There's a strobe here. It's an emergency little toolkit of sorts that has like a window breaker on it here. And there's a magnet on the bottom. And you got the strobe light. So it's pretty cool. Oh, and there's like...
Do you feel confident that you could break a window if you had to? Like in that moment?
This thing? Yeah, absolutely.
But if you had to use your elbow?
To do. I mean, I don't know.
I don't think...
No, I'm not really good at that. I'm not a burglar or anything. For the record, getting over a little bit of a sickness, RJ and listeners, so bear with me, I guess, if my voice...
You were down with
different.
The sickness?
I was actually listening to that yesterday. It's very funny because somehow that came... I think as I was talking about me being sick to one of my friends, and then that song got in my head. But yeah, so getting over that, I don't think it's related to...
The Cowboys used to run out to that song. I don't know if you... I'm being serious. The Cowboys used to run out of the tunnel to that song.
And so did every like high school football team like when we were in high school, probably.
Nobody's ever run out to that song or warmed up to Eminem's Till I Collapse. Those are things
Till I
that
Collapse
are very
was
unique.
A big, like, having played high school basketball, that was big. This Is Why I'm Hot by Mims, very big. What's that one? Let It Rock. That was really big in 2010. Yeah, so there you go.
Wow. So you're feeling better. It seems, it's opening week for professional baseball. Houston Astros, reigning World Series champions. I'm here representing. They beat the Philadelphia Phillies, in the World Series. JT Realmuto got thrown out of a spring training game for breaking the most egregious law in the history of the world, apparently, embarrassing an umpire.
The officials feel a need to insert themselves unnecessarily.
That was really, really, really like all time dumb. You know what I mean? Like there are some things that like belong in the dumb Hall of Fame. Like that's definitely one of them. I wanted
There's
to ask
a bigger
you something
problem
before.
There. And it's people, I think, are just not equipped to like in general, not even specific people, obviously some more than others, are just not equipped to handle positions of power and like authority. They're just not. Like it goes to their heads and then it's all done from there.
I agree. So I wanted to ask you something before we got started on the football talk. We have obviously a lot to get to with regards to every single team in the NFC. It's going to kind of be a big Washington Commanders episode. That doesn't happen a lot unless Rick Devens is around here, which we talked about last week. By the way, congratulations to you and shout out to your parents who helped kind of connect the dots and made us realize it was 2021 when Rick Devens made the appearance here.
I have a pretty good memory.
I mean... Yeah, you didn't have any facts. I'll say Mr. and Mrs. G, you know, came with some stone cold facts, which they deserve credit for. But that being said, before we get into all of that fun, super important question, Brandon. Are you a Big Bang Theory guy?
Never really watched it. You know, I've seen like, you know, if it's the only thing on, maybe I'd put it on TV, but not actively watching it. More like a background show at most, if anything.
Ron Rivera said at the owners meetings on Tuesday that he is a big Big Bang Theory guy. So not just a Big Bang Theory guy. He's a big Big Bang Theory guy. You know, look, Big Bang Theory, I think, was kind of the end of like really good sitcoms. Like I don't know that you can name a sitcom that's on TV right now that people are enjoying, right? But like that being said, every episode's like the same, right? You know, it's like, okay, wow, the guys, they do something nerdy. Ah, man, they get made fun of. Ha ha ha. You know, like what's new about this? Yeah. But I guess that's what Ron Rivera throws on.
A podcast, RJ. Hear me out. A little pitch for you. We should do a podcast about nothing. That's the podcast.
Yeah.
It's about nothing.
I have finished Seinfeld, at least. You haven't yet, at least unless you've done some serious work since we last talked about it.
Season 7, episode 20. I'm getting there.
Okay. Well, Big Bang Theory is cool. Like, I have no knock on it, but, you know, I don't know the context of why Ron Rivera said that. I would love to understand. Like, when I saw the quote, I opened the photo in the tweet and I thought, is he wearing like a hoodie under a blazer? You know what I mean? Like something like that. Like, was that the genesis of the conversation? But no, like just kind of standing there, you know, normal clothes. Bazinga, Ron Rivera, bazinga. But anyway, we have to start with the Philadelphia Eagles. No real like headlining news. And I say that with regards to every single team. We have some important things and some interesting things to get to. But my perception about what the biggest headliner for the Eagles is may not be what yours is. But so give us the rundown. What's the latest in the land of the birds?
Well, I want to talk about something that doesn't really transition to the topic after that, which I think makes more sense. Terrell Edmunds, the Eagles signed a safety. They needed a safety because they lost Marcus Epps, once Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Who actually Howie Roseman spoke about for the first time at the NFL owners meetings this week and kind of confirmed what I think we already knew, is that they were negotiating with him earlier in the process. There was a point where it kind of reads like, okay, I think we're kind of too far apart here, so we're going to pivot to something else. And then it clearly didn't work out. In the end, Howie was asked if they actually had a chance to match with CJ DJ. And he kind of a weird answer. He's like, I don't even remember, but basically gave the sentiment that even if he did, it just didn't necessarily seem like the most tenable situation, because Chauncey Gardner-Johnson would clearly be returning on a deal where he felt not really happy and disrespected in the same place, as opposed to kind of going elsewhere where in theory maybe he can get paid more. Whatever. In any case, Eagles sign Terrell Edmunds. And it's an interesting signing because this is a safety who is a former first-round pick who has not really missed many games in his career, who has not made a ton of plays, but by some standards, I've seen, I think the Athletics the Athletics Steelers writer said that Edmunds had his best year last year. I know there was a lot of sentiment over at Behind the Steel Curtain that Edmunds is like a good player. And actually, an article up on their site right now has the exact headline, RJ. Say what you want, but Terrell Edmunds is a good NFL safety. Like this is written after the fact of him leaving Pittsburgh. So the Eagles got him for pretty cheap. And that's kind of maybe just speaks to how the safety market wasn't really hopping this offseason. But I think it's a really nice signing for the Eagles in terms of, at the very least, a stopgap, a guy who might be able to be a decent starter for this team.
Safety market pretty chill this offseason. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, kind of an example of that, obviously. The tight end market, super chill this offseason. The running back market is like forever chill, obviously. I don't have like a passionate take like positively or negatively. I mean, you know, availability is an important thing. That's, you know, kind of been the drum I've been beating when it comes to Brandon Cooks, right? Like, if you're playing all the time and you're having success, you're putting up numbers or whatever, like, that's worth paying for. I mean, paying minimally for, obviously, which is what's happening here. And it had to happen, right? Like, you know, last time we talked, like, the Eagles had like what, two safeties on the roster, and one was Reed Blankenship. Kind of had to happen.
I think the bigger theme, and if you want to weigh in this, is that, like, I mean, this is, the salary cap is real. People want to say it's not, it's real. Like, if it was fake, then the Eagles could have just re-signed everyone instead of having to sign like Rashad Penny for a $600K guaranteed and Terrell Edmunds for cheap and Nicholas. These are like bargain signings. That's what they had to do. And I think, again, the theory is that the offense is what's most important. They've really kept that nucleus together, except for losing Isaac Sumalo to the Steelers, but that wasn't unexpected by any means, and they have Cam Jurgens, who's the second round pick, as a potential successor in-house already there. So I think that's what they're really counting on, is Jalen Hurts and the offense being the driving force, and the defense just being like they're just these signings specifically, like Edmonds and Morrow, just kind of plugging guys in where you can at least hopefully get some kind of level of competency out of that. But that being said, I mean, these are low investment guys for a reason. Like they're not just like, oh, great, amazing bargain signings, everyone. Like if one of these players from this group turns out to be good, then that's a success. They're all, there's no way, like it's very unlikely that they're all just going to, you know, outperform expectation, be really good. So I don't think that's like a criticism. It's just the position the Eagles were in, right? Like you can't, like what else were they supposed to do, I guess?
I mean, I feel like this is a, this belongs in the same box as the like phenomena that's going to happen inevitably. Like we're going to be sitting here in October and November, and the Eagles are going to be, I don't know, 6-4 or something like that. And people are going to be like freaking out, right? Like, oh, this team's already lost more games. You know what I mean? Like this, they're lower in DVOA. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's just going to be like an onslaught of like criticism, like measuring it up against last season. Like it was never going to be the same. And that's true for anything. Like, and that's true positively and negatively. There is regression to the mean in positive and negative senses. So like this was inevitable. If you're an Eagles fan and you're like, this sucks. Like, well then you weren't living in reality. You know what I mean? Like you weren't understanding that like this was going to happen. And it wasn't going to happen because the Eagles went all in and whatever. It was going to happen because this is just life. This is just business. This is the way that you know, the world works in the NFL. Contracts are for a certain length of time. And when they run out, they run out. Sometimes it makes sense to bring players back. Sometimes you can. Sometimes they work with you. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they want to get paid and everything is okay. But now it's on, you know, a really talented front office and coaching staff to, you know, make lemonade with their new lemons.
Yeah, I mean, you can't realistically have a Pro Bowler at every position. That's just not. Eagles almost did last year, but that's not the norm. So
I mean,
you know, I don't
hate. I say I hate, but like, it doesn't really bother me to pour salt in the wound. But like, that's why losing the Super Bowl was so like. And you've said
no,
this,
I,
you know what I mean. But like,
I was on the record with that beforehand. Yeah,
that because like. And I said, you know, I said this like leading up to the Super Bowl, it would have been the most like Madden season of all time, right? Like led the NFL and ABCD, you know, all the way down to Z, like had, you know, won all the awards, took home all the things. And like that was, but without the one thing, you know, it all kind of rings hollow. And that's just, you know, again, the NFL wasn't going to stop existing. You know what I mean? Like football wasn't going to go away forever. Like this is just the process that follows losing the Super Bowl.
So the other thing that the Eagles have going on, maybe. I don't really think. So the reporting, let's be clear here, came out.
Are you transitioning? Is that the thing you're doing?
Yeah, this is still, we're talking about Eagles still, but it's the Eagles side of.
Because this is the thing that everybody was like super excited about that we got tagged in a bunch of times. That's what I'm saying. Are you taking us there? That's my question.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, well, I didn't know that. Now I'm getting hyped. I didn't understand if you were doing that.
Ruining the flow of what I'm saying.
Get back in it.
Ezekiel Elliott. The Eagles apparently were one of the three teams that, let's be clear here, it was not said that he was talking to or negotiating with or had interest in him, but was his wish list of playing for was the Eagles, the Jets, and the Bengals. And it's been very funny because all of those teams have come out since and been like, nah, we're good in some form or another. With the Eagles, I'm guessing a team sentiment came and contacted John Clark, who put out there that the Eagles are happy with their running backs, which makes sense logically. I think the Jets and Bengals were asked more directly, like Zach Taylor and I forget, maybe Joe Douglas or whoever, Saleh from the Jets, basically kind of downplayed interest in Ezekiel Elliott, which doesn't mean they're definitely not going to sign him, but it's certainly like they could have been like, yeah, he's a good player. Maybe something will happen. They didn't say that. They definitely didn't leave the door open so much either. So very kind of weird to me that it would be Adam Schefter would leak out that those are Zeke's three finalists that he wants to play for. And it doesn't seem like there's mutual interest.
So this is Adam's wording, just so we're crystal clear. Right. And then obviously this got twisted in the aggregation and things like that. But so Adam Schefter's tweet, this was 5 days ago. So that was what, on Thursday. Cowboys running. By the way, he writes Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott. He's not the Cowboys running back. You know, like that, no. Like he's the former Cowboys, but so
former Cowboys running back. Right.
I'm just reading this verbatim. Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott has narrowed down his options about where to play to the Eagles, Jets, and Bengals, and he would like to make his decision about where to sign by the end of next week, per sources. Now, the end of next week is now the end of this week. But again, I will say, based on the following reports from different insiders and people connected to the three organizations, as you noted, those reports made this sound more like a wish list. I honestly didn't get wish list vibes completely, because when you think about it, again, the wording is Zeke has narrowed down his options about where to play. So that the implication there, and I'm not trying to like play semantics, but you tell me, the implication is that he had, I don't know, like more than three options, right? And that he, like a recruiting trip, you know, put the three hats on the table and is now going to pick one of the hats on live national television at the U.S. Army Bowl.
I would say that what I wrote in the article at the time last week was, okay, I think this seems to be kind of more of a preference on his end. Now, that being said, would you prefer to play somewhere where they don't want you? So, like, that's kind of the question there. Is like, it would seem there was some kind of, like, why would you want to play somewhere where they definitely didn't want you?
So this is the Cowboys kind of thing. This is like our Venn diagram, by the way, to get from Eagles to Cowboys talk.
There would be an emergency podcast, obviously. Right. NFC's mixed podcast.
That was the first thing. Zeke. Yeah. That was the first thing Brandon slacked me when I was like, you know, knee deep.
A big question. It's like, when do we do the emergency podcast? Like, it has to feel right. And it clearly did with Carson Wentz last year.
Right.
They're very specific events.
This would be on that. And we even said, I think at the time, that had the DeMarco Murray thing happened in the era of the NFC's mixtape, that would have necessitated an emergency episode. So this and this obviously, you know, invoked the memories of that. Although at the time, DeMarco was this sort of like high prized free agent. I don't even remember what the contract was that he signed with.
Coming off a career year as opposed to.
But so like, you know, there are definitely some different circumstances. So from what I saw, you mentioned all the Eagles reporting and kind of poo-pooing it. Now the Eagles players that I saw, you and I were talking about this, did seem to kind of be at least stoking the flame, right? Like having some fun and kind of like mildly recruiting some eyeball emojis, things like that. On the other side of that coin, though, Breece Hall of the New York Jets tweeted out, "We're good." You know, actually was like, "We're good."
Well, that's also as a player at his position, though, to be fair.
Well, I know. But
that would directly impact him. It wouldn't impact Lane Johnson or Darius Slay.
Right. Now, what I will say from the Cincinnati perspective, the only thing I really saw was Zach Taylor, who happened to do, I think it was a local radio interview that night. And just, you know, kind of, he did kind of casually say like, look, great player. We're big fans, you know, but kind of like towed the political line. Now I think the connection that there's like a low hanging fruit connection to each of the three in my mind. The Jets is the like would be Aaron Rodgers destination, right? So like they're the, like the super team of this offseason, right?
You should mention that Schefter kind of followed this up, which is bizarre. The follow-up tweet, did you see the follow-up tweet to what he had there? Because he kind of touched on what you're touching on, but it's very bizarre.
Go ahead.
It's bizarre because he mentioned like, okay, like these could be, I guess, three connections to why those teams, like he didn't say that directly, but that's kind of the inference there. The one was, as you said, a potential Rodgers landing spot, which we expect. Right. Okay, sure, that makes sense. Even if you don't think Rodgers is good, he obviously is clout. Two, he was at Ohio State with Joe Burrow. Like, are you serious? Did like Zeke even know who Joe Burrow was when they were like together there for not even a long
time? The Joe Burrow part is irrelevant to me, but I do think it matters that like he was a star in the state of Ohio, right? Like, I mean, he's one of the like biggest superstars to have played football in that state in the last 20 years. So like is a small factor to me.
Even if you buy that one,
I agree. It is a massive leap to connect him to Joe Burrow in that sense.
Well, then the Eagles one of all doesn't make sense, because then Schefter brought up that the Eagles signed DeMarco Murray. What does that have to do with anything? And also, that didn't work out well. I mean, why would that be like a good reason? Like, oh, well, they signed DeMarco Murray, so they definitely would sign Zeke.
The DeMarco
that
thing
out
is
so well.
The DeMarco thing is truly insignificant. But like, I could kind of see the like divisional aspect, you know, and like the, you know, trying to, you know, I was so curious how each of the fan bases involved here were reacting to this. So like I checked out obviously our SB Nation team sites in the comment section. I checked out the subreddits for each of these teams. And a take I saw a lot specifically among Eagles fans was like, hey, look, this could help, you know, Jalen Hurts doesn't have to do all these quarterback sneaks, right? This could help mitigate that. Like Zeke kind of becomes your short yardage, you know, goal line back or whatever. You're like Mike Tolbert or whatever. So like that argument makes a little bit of like football sense. But I have a hard time seeing how any team is going to be, you know, all in on Zeke as their like RB1, so to speak. When he was first released, and we talked about this, you know, at BTB, we talked like, where do we think he could end up? Kind of the hip suggestion was the Bills. But since then, they've signed Damian Harris. You know, Devin Singletary obviously left for the Texans, right, in free agency. But the Harris signing obviously kind of eliminates them from contention here. Now, for what it's worth, Jerry Jones at the owners' meetings on Monday said that the door was not closed. That was the aggregated line. However, if you go listen to what Jerry said, it wasn't the way that line makes it out to be. Now, I don't know that this is the biggest deal, but if you want to like, if you want all the things that are a part of this subject,
all the fixins.
Zeke's first tweet, I don't know if you saw this, since being released, no. Was something, I can't quote it verbatim, but it was like, I want my number 15 back, which he wore, obviously, at Ohio State. And now that that's so dumb, by the way. Like, I know we both agree.
I have a really quick interjection on that, because some people were like, well, the Eagles are definitely not going to sign him because they retired the 15. So he can't possibly sign the Eagles. It's like, I don't think that's what that means.
Yeah. The point I'm getting to isn't like proof, like this is not going to happen at the Cowboys. But so Zeke wants to wear 15, right? Like wherever he winds up. Yeah, that's his goal, because he wore 15 in college. Now he can wear 15 because of the change in the NFL rules. OK, you and I were talking on Tuesday, March 28th. Shout out to the Atlanta Falcons. The Cowboys announced on Monday that they have given number 21 to new cornerback Stephon Gilmore. So 21 is off the books. 21 is unavailable. 15 is taken by Will Greer. So a lot of Cowboys fans are like, to your point, like, oh, well, how can Zeke come back? You know, Stephon Gilmore possibly has 21 and Will Greer has
Will 15. Greer. You can't possibly get him to change his jersey number. It's impossible.
Like, am I saying it's impossible, in my opinion, that the Cowboys sign Zeke this summer at training camp and change Will Greer's number, and it's like the new era of Zeke wearing number 15? Like, I can't say that's impossible, but
give
I
me
really,
a percentage,
you
know, chance of how likely
five,
you think
I would
that
say 5%. I would say 5%. Like, no, I thought about that for fun, but no, like, I mean, I think they're just they are moving on, and good for them. We've already given them their credit for that, for being non-emotional about this. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that the three teams that were, you know, preferences or whatever are the Eagles, which are this like spicy, you know, team relative to the Cowboys specifically. The Jets, who do have the Rodgers clout and everything that's going on with them in the news. And the Bengals, you know, new rising perennial AFC powerhouse with a lot of personalities and, again, connected to his hometown. Like, again, if you had to pick an Ohio-based team to connect Zeke to, you can't pick the Browns, right? Like for Zeke, because they have, you know, Nick Chubb. You know, like that's just not possible right now. So the Bengals make a little bit of sense with Samaje Perine leaving in free agency. You never know.
I think there's still alive. I still think he could end up in Dallas, but I wonder if the Eagles part of it at any level is like kind of putting pressure in, at least from his camp, not in actuality, because I don't think the Cowboys care, but like from his camp's version of like, well, we could sign with the Eagles, so we better like re-sign him or whatever. But I think that's dumb and not actually effective at all. So, and I think he's gonna be on the market for a while. I could be wrong, but I don't know. I feel like my sense of the situation is that Zeke still thinks he's like better than he actually, like, I think where Zeke is he's valuing himself up here, and I think what the market is here. And I think there's a difference there, and I think that's going to lead to him being out of work for a while.
I certainly can't speak for Zeke and his assessment of the situation, but my read is that, you know, Zeke has accomplished all individual accolades, right, that you can, right? He's got two rushing titles, right? Like, he has had a, you know, incredible statistical career to this point, right?
One rookie of the year.
He didn't win rookie of the year.
He should have.
I don't know if you were trolling, but he did win offensive player of the year.
Of course, he should have. I mean, he was the rookie of the year.
So, I mean, my point is like Zeke needs a Super Bowl, right? Like that's the most important thing. Like what?
I was just watching some Zeke highlights from 2016. Get it in that, like, it's just so clear. I was so different. And now that makes sense. He's had such a big workload. He's the active NFL leader in touches. Do you know where he ranks among all-time NFL players in touches?
I think, like, 12th. I mean, I really don't
46.
Know.
Like, that's pretty crazy. And but he just he was such a beat. Like, he was so good. And it's just he's fallen. I'm not trying to slander him now. I'm just saying, like, it's crazy how running back and having all those touches totally just like takes the juice out of you. Because he was like, his 2016 highlights are like, that's a different player than the player you see today.
People act like he was only like an elite player that 26, like that was clearly the peak, right? Like, he was never like that player again, but like that was just such a special, you know, year for him. But he was still incredible. Even
he was smaller. He got so big. He got so freaking like he like, loaded up.
In 29, so the 2019 season followed his contract extension, and he was still so good. The drop off really, really happened in 2020, and I think the fact that he lasted as long as he did is a testament to how good he is as far as being a running back in the modern NFL, right? Like, you don't see, you know, 7 year careers at this point. But anyway, I think he wants a Super Bowl. So like, I don't think it is a bad thing for Zeke to wait and chill and see, like, you know. Not like a wait for an injury situation, but like wait and see who looks good, right? Like, jump on at the end. Like, you don't have to go through OTAs and all that stuff at this point. So
in Dominican Sue and Linval Joseph last year. Yep.
I just saw a tweet. The Nets are shutting down Ben Simmons for the season. I know you're super bummed about that.
Wow, shocker.
But just last thing on Zeke is, I mean, yeah, like, I wouldn't be shocked if it takes time or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But if he does wind up with the Eagles, obviously the Cowboys will see him twice a year. I don't know if you remember this, but the NFC East plays the AFC East. So if he winds up with the Jets, he will play the NFC East as well in 2023. Yep. The Cowboys host the Jets, so that game would take place in Dallas if that wound up.
Aaron Rodgers and Zeke.
I know. That is so weird. Against Mike McCarthy, like, who would have ever thought? As we talk about the Cowboys here, you are passionate about this subject the way I am. Stephon Gilmore in 21, your thoughts?
It's a good pick. It's more of a safety number in my mind, or like a slot corner.
So disagree.
I don't hate it. No, I like, I'm thinking of Joselio Hansen used to wear that 21 for the Eagles. I don't hate 21 in the outside corner. It's good. It's a good number. In general, like, regardless of position, it's a pretty strong number.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult like to look bad in 21. Like, some numbers look a little bit questionable in certain team fonts, but like, it's, you can't find one that 21 looks bad in. I never thought that Zeke was at 21. I wanted him to wear 33 so badly. Like, I felt like that would have looked really, really, really good.
Yeah. The E's. EE.
I didn't even think about that, but like, that would have been awesome too. So Stephon Gilmore is wearing 21. I'm on the record as not being a fan of skill position players in the single digits. I hate this world that we're in. That being said, Brandon Cooks, he's wearing number 3.
Not terrible.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I can kind of like, it's palatable. You know what I mean? Like, I don't hate it as much as I normally, like, and maybe I'm just getting used to this world. Poor Ronald.
If you picked
Jones,
8 though, no.
He can't. Not on this team.
Who's 8?
Troy Aikman. They don't hand that number out. They don't hand out 8. Yeah. They don't hand out 12.
But they don't retire numbers, 22. Right?
No, but they don't hand them out. I mean, they will hand out like 74, Bob Ali's number, like to a rookie at camp, but they never let him wear it on the active roster. But they never even hand out 8, 12, or 22. Those are the precious ones. So Cooks is in 3. Poor Ronald Jones, dude, 32. Gross. Like,
we have to do. So I usually do a.
I know the jersey like number me. Analytics, yeah. Blah blah blah. Yeah. We've heard this a million
we
times.
Do it. Why haven't we? We have to do that for the East. We have to do that.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm like, we're walking
that
in.
That would be
we're
a long podcast. So do every single number.
Well, the that new ones work. We can do the rookie to figure the like the headlining rookies, right? So, but again, that's what I was getting
get
your thoughts
on the record with the other ones though too.
It seems like we agree that Stephon Gilmore in 21, really solid choice. There weren't a lot available, and so 21 was kind of like the coolest number for him. And 3 for Brandon Cooks could be worse. You know what I mean? I would love to see an 81 back in the fold. I think he's too small for an 81, but still, like, I really, really would love to see somebody rock 81.
Yeah, he's more of a like 10s number.
Yeah, teens. Like 10, 11. I could see him. I never liked him in 14. 13's okay. But 3. And them giving him 3 seems to be the latest indication that Anthony Brown will not be returning to the Cowboys because he was wearing it this past season. So tough scene for him. No other real big time. The Cowboys did have Tony Pollard sign his franchise tag. So that is official. There's no, you know, there was a small, slight question. What if he doesn't sign it? What's going to happen? Oh my gosh, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. But that did happen since we last spoke. Other than that, it's just kind of been chalk for the Cowboys as far as they're concerned.
Well, Jerry Jones, Cowboys news break you right now once you're done saying about Jerry Jones said.
Well, let's get to your thing first because my thing might
be. No, it's not that important. But Cowboys. Well, private workout with Purdue quarterback Aiden O'Connell.
Wow. They have
working out a quarterback.
They have said, so they brought Cooper Rush back. They have said that they really want to draft a quarterback. I would bet a lot of money that they're going to take somebody on day three. So
other teams who have private visits and workouts with him include the Jets, the Raiders, the Saints, the Colts, and the Bears. What do those teams have in common?
Anyway, so Jerry Jones, I haven't addressed this on any podcast on our network yet, but on Monday, Jerry threw people into a bit of a tizzy. So Terrence Steele, the Cowboys placed a second round tender on him this offseason, in case anybody's unaware. He has not signed that yet, at least to any sort of public knowledge, but expectations are he'll return. He tore his ACL in the win against the Houston Texans, but the Cowboys have said many times they expect him to be ready for training camp. There was a video that was posted last week. He looks good, obviously, at this point. That being said, Terrence Steele has been the Cowboys' right tackle for the most part since 2020 when they found him as an undrafted free agent. Now, Jerry said on Monday at the owners' meetings that they have no plans to move him to guard. And everybody was like, who said you were going to move him to guard? That was kind of like the general reaction.
Not
like,
protest who, too
like,
much.
Yeah, like, whoa, who are you talking like about right now? Now the Cowboys restructured Tyron Smith's deal, so he's returning. We've already talked about that. So the expectation, I would say, from most Cowboys fans has been that Tyron will play left tackle until he gets hurt. And until then, Tyler Smith will play left guard and Terrence Steele will man the right side of the offensive line. It does not seem like Jason Peters is going to return at the very least until the beginning of the regular season, if that even winds up happening. So the implication, if you take Jerry at his word, that there have been some discussions, at least, about moving Terrence Steele inside to the other side to left guard, are that Tyler Smith would maybe stay at left tackle and that Tyron Smith would resume the right tackle post that he had after Terrence got hurt. I'm sure you remember that, Tyron playing on the right side, which he hadn't done since his rookie year. So I don't know. I don't know exactly what the Cowboys are doing. I don't know if they're posturing ahead of the draft, if they're, you know, trying to BS everybody and throw people off the scent. It makes sense that they would take a guard in the first round. A lot of people like Osiris Torrance. A lot of people like Steve Avila. But yeah, this was a weird wrench that Jerry kind of threw in the middle of some otherwise peaceful waters.
What if Terrence Steele played in Pittsburgh?
It is. I don't know if you know this or not. It's spelled with an E on the end. So like it's just lacking the RS.
Terrence Steeler.
That'd be cool.
Oh, it's singular. He's a Steeler. Him.
I know. I mean, but
like you call someone a cowboy or an eagle, they would be a Steeler.
Not actually, feel awkward. Whenever I write that, like when I refer to someone as a cowboy, it feels awkward to not include the S at the end. I don't know if you feel that.
It does feel weird. Yeah, I would say an Eagles player. I wouldn't say an eagle a lot, but
right.
I mean, I think it's actually something that gets said more than like it's better when you say it than it is written out. Right. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. Like, I don't mind like saying it in an audible way, but like writing out a cowboy or an eagle
doesn't
or
look
a
right.
giant.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awkward. That's what I'm saying. But, so that's what I'm saying. You would have to add the RS.
Do you remember Landon Collins' famous tweet from right after he was drafted?
No.
He put, "I'm a giant baby." The G capitalized. Like, he is a giant. But,
right.
You know,
it was like, and a
obviously, he should have had a comma after the giant, because then I'm a giant baby, like celebration, but it just read that he is a giant baby, which kind of was true. So there you go.
Okay.
A lot of Giants whiny safety are like, well, I don't know. The Giants fans aren't going to enjoy hearing that, but outspoken maybe safeties, intro role, Landon Collins. There's two. Another one that we can get to after the break.
All right, let's do that.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back from the break. Brandon, a lot of people reached out to me about my new pellet grill and had all sorts of suggestions. I made some stuff, and I got to tell you, it turned out pretty good.
I've been kind of casually glancing at, you know, these pictures you're posting on your Instagram, at RJ Ochoa, at Brandon Gouton for me. So I've been seeing some of the things look good. I feel like the salmon needed a little more seasoning, my man. Don't be shy. The seasoning. Season that bad boy up. A lot of seasoning.
I certainly wasn't shy about it. The salmon was really good. We did some Cornish hens. Those were incredible.
In my most Bill Simmons voice, I feel like Cornish hen is having a moment. I feel like I've seen a lot of hen stuff recently. A lot of hen. Like, where was that? Now it's here in my face.
I also feel like for somebody who you've said your piece about this, you are the only person who references Bill Simmons with regularity around here.
So, when did I do that before?
You've done it.
Listen, to be clear.
Okay. I mean, it's fine if you do. We're not going to judge.
You should.
We did some Cornish hens. We did some salmon. We did some regular chicken that turned out really well. Did some jalapeno poppers. Like, who doesn't like jalapeno poppers? That's my question to you. Who doesn't?
Jalapeno poppers, overrated or underrated? I've talked about loving jalapeno before a lot, so yeah,
it's one of those things that everybody likes. Like, and I tell you what, I'm gonna do some brats on Thursday for opening day. Super pumped about that. Sure. My big next expedition is I'm gonna do a pulled pork the week of the Masters, so we'll see how that goes.
It's a good time.
I'm a Giant, the baby.
Point was that outspoken Giant safeties Julian Love, as you will remember, criticized Nick Sirianni for his I enacted it for the audio listeners out there, his little nod at the camera during the Eagles Giants playoff game and whatnot, only to then leave the Giants and sign with the Raiders. Good friend of this podcast and my co-host on BGN Radio, Jimmy Kemsky, did a good NFC East free agency grades series for each team. I would recommend checking those out at phillyvoice.com. I thought he had a really interesting point on the Giants players loss section, where he basically wrote I'm counting here, like almost 20 paragraphs, not quite that long, pretty long, on Julian Love. And it is kind of crazy. I think he did sign, by the way, right after our last record. So that's a significant development. I thought the Giants were going to keep him. It seemed like a lot of Giants fans. That was the sentiment I got from Big Blue View and Ed Valentine as well. And he didn't sign for a crazy deal. It was like 2 years, $12 million. That's not a lot. So really interesting that he ended up leaving, and I can't read the whole section here, but basically, the way he summed it up at the end, for their grade, I'll just read this whole section. If you're a Giants fan and you have a truly objective eye in evaluating your team's players, be honest. It can't feel great hitching your wagon long-term to Daniel Jones. I mean, right? Jones aside, it's hard making sense of many of the Giants' moves. They can't afford James Bradbury, or Julian Love, but they can afford a non-impact off-ball linebacker in Bobby Okereke for $10 million per year? Explain that to me like I'm four. Ultimately, this front office, parentheses, perhaps as a director of ownership, question mark, and parentheses, has an unwillingness to restructure veterans' contracts at the expense of a better roster, and they're going to have a hard time competing with teams that are better at maximizing the use of their cap. Grade, C-.
I think that's a little critical. I think that's critical. I mean, like, I would love to, and I don't mean to be the, like, well, what's your plan guy, right? Like, I hate that, like, when you rip, because, like, you should be allowed to rip something, right? But, like, I hate when people respond to that, like, okay, well, what would you have done differently? You know what I mean? Like, those are different things. At the risk of sounding like that person, what were the Giants supposed to do this offseason? What was the plan?
Going back to last year, though, like, they did, like, so I think it's a it's factually incorrect to say they had to release James Bradbury. No, they didn't. That is not true. They couldn't keep him as is.
Why are we talking about and penalizing the Giants for releasing James Bradbury a year ago?
Because it's the same kind of thinking, like, oh, they couldn't keep Julian. Like, why aren't they making cap space for some of these players? They could be doing this by setting up void years and whatnot, but they're purposely not doing that. Or, I don't know, are they not familiar with it? I don't know. It's kind of a question mark.
Do we really think, like, letting Julian Love go is, like, the difference between the Giants being a good and not good team?
My question is, like, but it's not about the one move. It's not about that. It's the bigger picture. Is this something that are the Giants a smart front office? Are these it's a question. I'm not saying I have a definitive answer yet, but I'm questioning, are these the moves of a smart front office? Letting Julian Love walk for I think is a reasonable deal. Homegrown player, captain, good starter, for a reasonable deal, only so you can sign, like, Bobby McCain. Like, really? Like, is that a good move? Is that definitely what you should have done?
So I think that there are, and I know at least you seem like you're asking the question in an open-ended way, not through a slant or with an objective in mind. There are sometimes it's not just about the money, right? Like, sometimes it's not just like, oh, well, we could have paid that, right? Like, I think a good example, and I have no, like, evidence of this, but, like, to use the Cowboys as an example, we didn't talk about this actually. I'm pretty certain it was after we recorded last week. Dalton Schultz wound up with the Houston Texans on a 1-year deal worth up to $9 million. So not even, like, worth all the way up to nine, or, like, necessarily worth for $9 million. So, like, when that happened, there were a lot of Cowboys fans like, man, I don't know, I would have taken that, you know, like, I would have brought Dalton Schultz back. It's like, well, like, I mean, Dalton Schultz was on the tag, and again, these are different circumstances, but Dalton Schultz was on the tag last year, and maybe he wanted out, maybe he felt disrespected, maybe he wanted to move on. Again, all these are maybe sort of things. It's like, we have no idea how Julian Love felt with regards to the Giants. Like, you know, maybe he likes Seattle, you know, maybe he wants to go throw the fish, you know what I mean? Like, we have no clue. But, like, so I don't think you can just say, like, oh, they could have done this, and the fact that they didn't means that they're stupid.
I did see that. So Julian Love presented Seattle's offer to the Giants, and the team didn't match it, according to Dan Duggan from The Athletic. So they did get a chance to match that. And I don't know. I just think that's, again, it's not the one signing as a make or break, but I'm looking at the bigger vision here, and I've said before this offseason started, this was a crucial offseason for the Giants last year. For the most part, it was about taking their medicine. They couldn't do a ton because of what Dave Gettleman had kind of done poorly. And I think they did a reasonable job of limited options, kind of managing what they did. They kind of added a little bit more offensive line stability in John Feliciano and Mark Lewinsky. Feliciano, who also was kind of, I don't think we ever talked about here, that was also kind of a surprise departure for them. And kind of like a big deal. Like, they're losing their starting center. I don't think he was an amazing player by any means, but now you're going to have, like, another piece on the Giants offensive line and someone that I think is at some level key in Daniel Jones' success / development that is no longer part of the equation now. I think I've been pretty positive on the Giants really since the Dable hire and the Shane hire for the most part.
And the Wink Martindale hire. That was, like, that was part of it all. Like,
their whole coaching staff
gave them legitimacy, right?
Great point. And Kafka too, all of that. Absolutely. I thought they hired a really good coaching staff, but and wavered in season when it looked like they might have collapsed, and then gave them credit again when they didn't collapse. I'm not sold. Like, I'm not fully sold that as much as I was before, or at least thought like before, like they're definitely on the right path. They're definitely on the right path. Now I'm wondering a little bit more.
Well, so I think that the Giants have finally become a team that we can critically analyze, right? Like they've never really been that, right? Right? Like they've just kind of like thrived and won the lotto twice, right? Like that's kind of been who they've been. And so I think they're finally seated at the adults table, right? And so now it's like a matter of like, okay, well, if you're seated at the adults table, like we're going to look at your outfit, right? Like we're going to look how you walked in, you know, we're going to kind of measure you against the other adults for the first time. And so like, I get that. Like, so I'm not saying we have to blindly trust this and like have nothing but optimism and sunshine and rainbows for the Giants. But what I will say is like, they have at least earned the benefit of the doubt. And that's not to say like, oh, wow, now we have to give them the benefit and purely the benefit all the time. It's fair to wonder and it's fair to speculate. And it's fair to say, well, why didn't you like Julian Love? But we do trust Brian Daboll right at this point. And so I think that they have, I referenced making lemonade earlier. They are making some lemonade, right? Like it might not be the sweetest. It might not be, you know, the most citrusy if that's your thing, but they are finally making lemonade instead of just water. This is at the very least, the definition of it is constituted as lemonade. I mean, and so I don't know what the Giants look like this year, but I know that they kind of have a short-term plan. And I think that that's like, this is the most like real the Giants have been as a franchise in like our adult life. Right, like, because they weren't a real team even before this like run of incompetence. Like, they were just Eli Manning and getting lucky every now and then.
I think the danger, though, of like reaching I think we talk a lot about like how do you manage failure and like how do you get better. You know, how do you go from being bad to good? But I think it can be kind of a dangerous territory where, like, what do you do with success? Because success is obviously relative. Like, how do you handle that? And there are cases, different teams, different, you know, whatever, like the different levels of that in terms of like, okay, the Eagles won the Super Bowl. But then I think in the immediate aftermath of that, they thought so highly of themselves. They made some moves that were kind of arrogant and whatnot, because I think they were kind of full of themselves a little bit. And I wonder if the Giants maybe are at that at some level. It's been so long since they've had like really any kind of taste of success. And not to be clear, I'm not saying Daboll and Shane so much, because that doesn't really apply to them, but ownership. And, you know, ownership definitely has an influence in these kind of things where, like, I wonder, you know, if they're overrating some of their, if they're overrating Daniel Jones and, I think, and if, this group of what they have right now.
So Jones's guaranteed money runs up after 2024, right? Like, if they really want, you know what I'm saying? Like, they can reshuffle things, reset things in, you know, start planning for that a year from now. Like, they had no real path towards like any of that this offseason because of the like kind of surprise success that last season was. And so, you know, a lot of their plan got accelerated, but because of that, they weren't able to get, you know, call it momentum or whatever underneath them the way that, say, the Lions are doing, right? Right. The Lions are kind of a slow burn and have the like proper momentum to be able to like jump and take off versus the Giants just like flew right out of the nest. So yeah, I think that they're kind of building the bike as they ride it kind of, you know, thing in some senses. And sometimes that means you make mistakes along the way. But again, I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt with regards to most things at this point in time. Like, that they have not, we marked them as dead, right? We said they're about to blow this 7-3 thing. They're about to completely and totally fall apart. They're going to miss the playoffs. Typical Giants. They built that bike, right? Like, while riding it, and they, you know, were really impressive down the stretch. And so, you know, there might be some hiccups or bumps or wrinkles along the way. But again, I'm inclined to trust them a little bit, which is a weird place to be at.
They were actually the number one team in terms of Football Outsiders did a list of DVOA overachievers. They were number one, which is not the best list to be on, because that could signal, you know, there is some level of regression coming. Now, I agree with you. I think where we can find common ground is that the Giants are certainly much more competent than they were, which, again, is not really saying a lot at all. That's definitely true. But I guess my question is, what is the ceiling here? Is it truly championship at the end of the day? Not right now, but at the end of the day. Or are they kind of racing out to the middle and just like, you know, going to be happy with that at some level? Like, okay, we're, you know, we're back to being respectable. And obviously, I'm not saying like happy in that, as they're not trying to win the Super Bowl. But I just think I'm getting a sense, too, just like from the vibe of fans, that it's like, just because you've gone from being such a joke to being competent doesn't necessarily mean the next step is like, now we're going to be championship contenders. Progression doesn't always just like work like that. There could be a dip back down, or you could kind of just level out and not really ever get over the hump. So that's just raising a question.
let's tie a bow on this with the Commanders. We talked about how there was a lot to get to. So Ron Rivera, big Bang Theory guy. We covered that. I think we kind of have to start here. This was the last thing that we had shared, and then we'll get to the other stuff. But so Adam Schefter tweeted out, actually, like right before we started recording this, that the Josh Harris Mitchell Rails group, which now includes Magic Johnson, officially submitted a fully financed bid that meets Dan Snyder's $6 billion asking price per source. Now, I'm not sure if you saw this, but Dan Snyder reportedly not at the owners' meetings, but I believe that his wife, Tanya Snyder, was there just for full context. Now, Schefter, since we've been recording, Brandon quote tweeted himself and said, if accepted, this deal would break the previous record sale for our franchise set last August when a group led by Walmart heir Rob Walton bought the Denver Broncos for $4.65 billion. As our friend, by the way, Scott Jennings from Hogs Haven noted, that the report, we haven't read this article because we've been recording, but Schefter had a write-up about this. Apparently, according to Scott, does not mention Jeff Bezos at all. So it does seem like he might be out of the mix as far as ownership for the Commanders.
Well, I think that's good news for non-Commanders fans. I've said that. That's like the one thing I don't want to happen is Bezos to get involved. The Josh Harris part is definitely weird, as we've covered before with the Sixers part, but I would certainly prefer him to buy it than Bezos. So,
would it make you love the Sixers even just a bit less, just a teeny bit less?
No, because it's not like Josh Harris is not the Sixers.
Okay, then why does it bother you at all?
Certainly doesn't make me like him anymore, because I just don't want that. I just don't want that to mix. I just think it's a weird thing that shouldn't happen. That's why.
Okay, so we'll obviously be tracking ownership and the situation in Washington. Let's get to the thing that you shared. You felt really passionate about this. I'm whatever, but go for it.
I just thought it was an interesting thing I had stumbled across on Hogs Haven this morning. I was doing my daily link roundup at bleedinggreennation.com, and I saw an article, and I didn't even like fully get the premise at first, which kind of shows you how like out of sight, out of mind Chase Young has been for me, and you know, him missing so much time obviously contributing to that. There's an article on Hogs Haven titled "Is Chase Roullier the Commander's Most Valuable Chase?" And I'm like, yeah, like who else would it be? And then I was like, oh, Chase Young, totally forgot about him. And anyway, it's a long article, and I think, you know, we've been on the record before, like Chase really is like, he's an underrated player. He's pretty, I think I may have been like my pick or one of our picks for most underrated Commanders offensive player in our series, and also probably like up there. He is probably the second team center if we're doing an all NFC East team. I mean, obviously you're going to make your case for Biadasz, but in any case, like, good player. But the poll, which I thought was very surprising, asking if Chase Roullier was the best Chase, at least here's the specific question. Yeah, which Chase, getting back to 100%, because Chase Roullier coming off an injury, as was Chase Young for most of last year, which Chase, either Chase Young or Chase Roullier, back to 100%, do you feel is more valuable to the Commanders? Who do you think would win that poll, RJ? Chase Young or Chase
Roullier? I mean, obviously I would have said Chase Young. So
same. I was fully expecting Chase, and I wasn't even expecting it to be close, to be clear, because like, I know he's missed time. I get it. But we're talking about, like, you know, the number 2 overall pick who looked great as a rookie. And having experienced things with Eagles fans and like the way Eagles fans glommed on to Sidney Jones until like the last like summer he was with the team,
we've all had one of those like Eagles fans with Sidney Jones, who by the way is now with the Raiders. Was that this week? Or the Bengals?
Well, he was with them. He signed with the Bengals. Yeah.
Okay. But so Sidney Jones was the Eagles version of it. Second round pick, right? Sidney Jones. Right. And for the Cowboys, it was Jalen Smith, who, I mean, certainly played more, at least, from a quantitative standpoint,
Or even like Randy Gregory in terms of just like, man, if you can just, or like Josh Gordon, you know, these guys, it's just like, it doesn't have to be just injury. Like, oh man, if they could just get on the field. Like, so I was shocked to see Chase Young at 43% and Chase Roullier at 57% with almost 1,000 votes. Like that's not the biggest sample size, but that's pretty crazy. I think that this speaks to how like people are down on Chase Young, and there's a big decision to be made on Chase Young this offseason, by the way, because the 5th year option is going
right,
to be
right. So,
Commanders have to do that.
I believe Tua was the first to have it picked up. Now, that doesn't really mean anything, like, right? Like, you know, it's not like a race. I mean, like, a lot of players are that are going to have their fifth-year options picked up just haven't had it. So, as you mentioned, Chase Young, in case people forget, the second overall pick. Like, not like people, I think that kind of gets lost. Like, he was the second overall pick. They took him over Tua, and I think you could kind of argue that that, you know, was made, like, relative to just Tua, the incorrect decision, because you could kind of have a franchise quarterback. Now, again, Tua has his own issues, and we certainly hope he's okay. But the Dolphins certainly seem to believe he will be. You know, if you like, remember that was an early question after that rookie season was like, would you rather have Chase Young or Justin Herbert? And everybody's like, well, you know, Chase Young looks really, really, really good. Like, right now, is it even a question? You know what I mean? Like, it's not a question.
Chase Young. I mean, people thought Chase Young was the best prospect in that class, like, even over Burrow. Like, some people thought he was like the best prospect.
Chase Young has been in the NFL for 3 years, and obviously the second season was when the NFL expanded to 17 games in the regular season. So he's been eligible for 50 regular season games. Do you know how many he has played?
Like, I don't know, like 24?
27. You're talking about, like, just over half. And I think it's – so these are the top 10 picks in the 2020 NFL draft. So yes or no, fifth-year options getting picked up, your opinion. Joe Burrow, obviously. Yeah. Chase Young, TBD. Jeff Okuda,
so probably. Chase Young's, by the way, it's $17.5 million.
That's a lot. That's Jeff a lot Okuda.
I'm going to say no on Chase Young.
So Jeff – like, just like, humor me.
Jeff Okuda, no.
I think it's possible, but maybe not. No. Okay. Andrew Thomas, probably.
I mean, did this, not to get down a Lions wormhole, but didn't they sign a couple cornerbacks?
They did. That's true. And I think he's been connected to trade talks. Okay. So let's say no there.
Yeah, so no.
Andrew Thomas, probably. Tua, yes, obviously. Justin Herbert, definitely.
Yeah, Herbert, yeah.
Derek Brown in Carolina.
Yes, definitely.
Agreed. Isaiah Simmons in Arizona, probably not. And no. CJ Henderson, obviously, or even, at least not with
is he with Carolina still?
Yeah, because he got traded to the Panthers.
I don't know.
If we play the game like measuring it against the team that like drafted him, because that's what would like constitute a success of the pick. You know what I'm saying? Like the answer is no. And then Jedrick Willis in Cleveland.
I guess he plays, right? I've not tapped into the Browns like that. But what was the point of this? What was your point?
My point is like and I actually thought like Chase Young was going to be this outlier, but you're talking about two of the three top three picks probably not going to have their fifth year option picked up. Maybe you're going to have five of the top 10 picks. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm. So like, that's just not a great hit rate in general, but it's not a great, you know, people, myself included, love to bash the Cowboys because it's like, you spent the fourth overall pick on a running back. Like, it's such a poor return on investment, like, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You never know where you're going to be picking that high again, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's so, like, you don't want to have the second overall pick, like, organically, right? And so, like, that's just such a miss. You know what I mean? And it's a shame because it looked like such a hit after that first year, but it's just, it hasn't panned out.
Felt like a can't miss kind of pick. It was very frustrating to see the Commanders end up at number two overall because it was kind of coming down to the wire there, I think, in terms of checking the tank standings. And it was like, you know, come on, Lions. I think it was the Lions who blew it. They could have had him. Ended up working out though.
I'm looking at the defensive ends drafted that year, and like it's hard to find one that I would feel like great about. I'm not saying that like exonerates Chase Young, but you look at that first round and like, if I told you any of these other players were on the Commanders, like you would be freaking out more. Like, obviously any of the quarterbacks, Javon Kinlaw, I think would scare me more at this point. Jerry Jeudy, I'd be concerned about. CeeDee Lamb, obviously. Jalen Reagor, hello. Justin Jefferson, obviously. This first round really kind of stinks.
It was the COVID year, which is definitely an interesting wrinkle in things. But that's all we had on Chase Young. I want to get last topic.
My next thing. I mentioned the owners' meetings. The coaches spoke earlier today for you and I, yesterday for the listeners. It was on Tuesday that the coaches spoke. And on Monday, just to kind of go from a timeline perspective, it was reported that Lamar, actually right before John Harbaugh spoke. Do you believe that was purposeful, by the way?
Yeah.
From Lamar Jackson? Okay, right. Okay, just make sure we're on the same page. So Lamar Jackson's like, I want to trade. I want out. I said I wanted to trade back on March 2nd, blah, 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 blah. Okay, cool. We got this, Lamar. Every team's talking about Lamar. Should the Jets be in on Lamar? But like Lamar, you know, I saw somebody refer to this as the Lamarathon, which I don't like, because then you're changing the pronunciation of marathon. His name isn't LeMaire. If his name was LeMaire, you can call it the LeMarathon, but you can't call it the LeMarathon. That's not a word. So just to be clear. But anyway, so Ron Rivera was talking about quarterback. This is a tweet from Ian Rappaport, just to read it verbatim. Commanders coach Ron Rivera, discussing his quarterback, says he believes Sam Howell has many of the same qualities of Brock Purdy. As for adding a high money quarterback, in parentheses, Lamar Jackson, he says they never looked into it. I know he's a tremendous talent is the quote, but it wasn't for them. So I don't want to like aggregate the quote improperly, but it seems like Ron Rivera is content playing the lottery that Sam Howell is not just any good quarterback, but Brock Purdy specifically, as opposed to sniffing around the idea of Lamar Jackson.
But then why wouldn't you just draft Brock Purdy? Like, when did you come to this realization? Because it clearly wasn't before then. Like, when did you decide that Sam Howell, and again, the sample size that Sam Howell has played in, it's one game, you were like one game, and okay, now this guy is like the other guy who didn't lose when he was started, except to the Eagles, but like also still a small sample size and not like a great, like, do we really know what Brock Purdy is?
Do you think, if like, would you trade, I mean, Jalen Hurts is a bad example, but like, I'm trying to think of a fair example. If you were the Steelers, would you trade Kenny Pickett for Brock Purdy straight
no
up?
No way. No.
Right? Like, because you don't have Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle and the best defense in the NFL and Kyle Shanahan, right? Like, I'm not trying to take away from Brock Purdy, but like, that's a big reason for his success. So like, this idea that like, oh, we'll just hope that he's Brock Purdy is really dumb.
You said on the SB Nation NFL show, you said it so confidently that you feel like, you know, I don't think Lamar's getting traded. I think everyone's misreading this. Everyone saw the trade request and was like, well, he's definitely done in Baltimore. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I don't think there's the market out there for him. I don't think teams are like dying to get him. I would be interested in being wrong, because I think that'd be fun.
You have to have one desperate team. And I think that both Rachel and Jeremy on Monday Football Monday that you're referencing made a great point. The Colts are the desperate team. Like, you got to have that team.
I agree. The Colts should be.
Because that's what I'm saying. Like, you got to have that team. And I improperly read, unless Ron Rivera is fibbing here, I presume, like, if the Commanders traded for Lamar Jackson, I would be legit worried. You know what I mean? Like, I would be like, okay, you know, this is a is left standing division.
You're assuming there's a new ownership, right? And that's the biggest reason why, too. Like, Lamar is not coming in here under Dan Snyder. There's 0% chance. Like, it's just not going to happen. Why would Lamar want to come to a team with like awful facilities and awful ownership? And he can't be like, well, they're going to sell the team. I mean, he would need to see that. I feel like he would need to see the sale happen before he signs on board. It's not just like, oh, it's going to happen. I don't think you're just taking anyone's word for that. Because what if it didn't happen? No, I just don't buy that for a second that he would want to come to Washington. And it seems like they're not even.
If the money's right, if the contract's there, but there are the reports, right, that Dan Snyder or the Commander structured the contract so that like the payment happens after the sale or whatever. So like, if there is like some question of the financial flexibility of the Commanders, and that obviously complicates matters. But I think, look, whatever, this isn't an AFC North mixtape. Shout out to our friend Kyle Barber. But either way, I mean, this is such great. If this is truth, if Ron Rivera really believes this, if the plan is truly to just hope that Sam Howell is Brock Purdy, right on, dude. Right on.
Yeah.
I'll watch the Big Bang Theory with you. I'll buy you the DVDs.
To be clear, the Commanders should be doing everything they can do to get Lamar, because, I mean, what are they going to do? Like, what is the plan? What are they actually... The plan right now, at best, is to just tread water until there's a new ownership. That's really kind of what they're doing. Like, Jacoby Brissett is a great quarterback if you want to kind of just, like, tread water and kind of waste a year, basically, but have someone who's kind of competent and not a total disaster. It does seem like a Lamar trade would be something that a new owner would want to do, right? Like, come in, make this big splash, boom, we're getting Lamar.
Like, the comp is the Walmart group that bought the Broncos last year, right? Russell, I mean, like, look, it all imploded and made them look stupid, but like, the hype was very real around the Broncos a year ago, right? Like, after all that, like, they were the talk of the NFL town, right? Like, I mean, as a result of all that, that same effect could happen here with the Commanders, presuming they traded for Lamar and then had the ownership sale.
Right. But again, I still think, and it is important to note that Lamar does have say in where he gets traded, because he's not signed his tender, but he has to sign his franchise tender in order to be traded. So
agree to terms on a new deal, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Like, but the point is, he's not under contract, and he can't be traded against his will, because he gets to decide if he wants to sign the tender or not. So he gets to pick. And I just have a hard time. He'd want to pick the Commanders. But if I'm wrong about that, then Commanders fans can throw it in my face and then realize that they're not actually going to win anything in the playoffs. So there you go.
Anything else I want to get to?
That was a good episode today. I'm going to give the NFC East mixtape MVP to me.
We can't give out an MVP. Like, it's got to be something to do with, like, a tape. You know what I mean? Like, actually, I got into this argument.
So you can do it on Monday Football Monday. That's definitely an MVP.
No, but I'm fine with calling it an MVP, like, or giving away something, but we can't call it an MVP. We can just straight up, like, it has to be something that, like, makes sense.
The golden cassette player.
Did you know this? I did not learn this until I was, like, maybe 20 years old. That apparently there used to be this machine that existed to only rewind VHS tapes. Did you know this?
Yeah.
It was called, like, a rewinder.
Yeah.
I refuse to believe that this is real. Like, who would
do
this?
What do you think movie places were doing? Movie rental places.
No, I'm super, like, that makes sense to me. That, like, a Blockbuster would have had, like, a machine. You put it in and you press rewind and it just doesn't. You put it back on the shelf. But, like, apparently people had these in their homes. And it was apparently a separate device from the VCR. So you got what I'm saying? So you mean to tell me that somebody at some point in time in their home put a VHS in the VCR, let it play, and was like, oh, crap. No, somebody didn't rewind this last time that they watched it. Took it out, put it in the other device, rewound it, took it out of the rewinder, and then put it in the VCR to play and watch the movie. That's so inefficient. Why would you not just rewind it within the VCR?
It's annoying to rewind stuff. It was pretty annoying because you'd have to, like, look at the screen.
It's
like,
10 times more annoying to do it on a separate device. That's what, like, who had this? Like, why did this exist?
I don't know. That's such a wow. I can't believe that is, like, our lifetime. That's just so forever ago. I remember going to West Coast Video and getting, like, video games and getting movies and VHS tapes and, like, having to rewind it, or else they would, like, charge you a dollar. Like, they would like charge a fee or whatever. Man, just, like, what a different time. Crazy.
Sort of along those lines, maybe like kids are still able to do this, maybe people are able to still do this, but, like, I remember, like, a time where, like, you mentioned, like, renting a video game where, like, you would do that on, like, a Friday and you would beat it, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, like, you would actually beat it, like,
beat it before Monday.
That's crazy to me. Like, now it takes me so long to, like, it takes me, like, months to beat a game, and it's like, I did this in, like, 2 days, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's just, that's a wild thing.
Some games were perfect for that, though. Some games, like, were meant to be rented in terms of their, like, their play time and beating them. Like, you know, we're not talking about, like, Skyrim here. We're talking about, I don't know, like, some, I don't even know of a good example, but, like, you know, a game that is beatable in that amount of time, 2 or 3 days.
Let's leave this up to the listeners. What should be the name of the award that we hand out every episode? So, like, what is akin to the NFC East mixtape MVP? We don't want to call it the MVP. That's way too chalk. What should we call it?
I don't want to give it to just us. I want to give it to, like, and if, like, we can give it to someone in the division, you know, we can give it to, like, players or coaches or whatever.
This week,
or
it goes, whatever it's called, the inaugural one goes to Chase Roulier.
No, I give it to me. It's going to me. Sorry.
I don't want to give it to us. I give it to me.
I mean, every week is what I'm saying. Not every week, like you guys do on Monday Football Monday. Sometimes things are bigger than ourselves, except in this case when I am the biggest one and I get the first award. And
well, you're 6'5". That's pretty big.
When are we gonna? Well, you can see that it's not true. Actually, when we do an in-person mixtape, we really need to start making this happen. We need to do an in-person mixtape. We have to figure it out. I don't know when, but we have to talk about it because we have to do it. And off-season one might make the most sense because it's hard. In-season's hard.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. We're going to ask a lot of the listeners. First, we're going to ask to name the award. Maybe it is the Golden Rewinder. I'm kind of partial to that myself at this point, like after my little spiel. But the other thing is everybody should tweet at Michael Kist, NFL, and say, we want a live, you can say it in your own words, but we want a live NFC East mixtape. Kist is the boss.
tweets that he gets, the more likely it's going to happen. Like, that's yeah, the, right. I mean, like, the more we need the ground support, we need the groundswell of support. The more tweets that happen, the more it's harder to ignore.
At Michael Kist NFL, and tell him that you want a live NFC East mixtape, and he will figure it out. I have full confidence in him.
Wow, got to get it done. I feel like it's been, it's time. We're overdue. We're overdue for it because we've had emergency NFC East mixtapes. We've had a lot of different. It's time. The live one is its own thing, and I feel like it's really time to get it going.
Congratulations on the Golden Rewinder, Brandon. Big time deal. Oh, I have a Survivor question for you. If we're all right, maybe spoiling something for people.
Well, we'll add a disclaimer. If you don't want to be spoiled for season 44 of Survivor, I am taking more time to let you exit the podcast now. Okay. They're gone.
Okay.
What is it?
Carolyn on the Purple Tribe. Do you believe that the idol she has is real or fake?
The idol that she found in
the birdcage. She found the birdcage idol, or she found the key, she unlocked the birdcage idol, whatever. But remember, I don't know if you remember, so everyone who has unlocked the birdcage has gotten a real idol and a fake idol. Mm-hmm. And one of them has beads, one of them has a coin. The first one we saw, the real one was the non-coin. But then Carolyn, when she was talking about it, held up the coin and said, I got a real idol. So my concern is that Carolyn mistook the two idols for one another.
She got both things, though. She got two things.
But then she planted the fake one. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, like, maybe my concern for her is that she, you know, mixed them up.
The and she's real one?
Yeah, you get what I'm saying? And she's holding on.
I don't think that's true, because I think the survivor Chiron for the person voted out last was fake idol in, like, their little, you know, what they have. You know what I mean? They show like what people have, like, oh, one like day have two third. Idols or one idol. Yeah, the lower third is what I'm going. Yeah, I think that. So, I mean, that said, fake idol.
But you understand where my concern's coming from, right?
Well, you know that every person who found something, it was a different extra decoy, right? It was like all the decoys were not the same. They found a real idol, and then the decoy idol was something different each time. I think in part. So then it's not very obvious that it's all fake, right? It's all like, oh.
Right, so that so Carolyn can be like, here's mine, and it's got the coin. And then somebody's like, well, wait a minute, like the coin was fake for me.
Oh, and I have a coin too. Yeah. Right. Okay. I think that was all differentiated.
That's the like theory that my wife and I ultimately landed on, but I still wanted to kind of bounce it around back and forth with you. Do you have a Survivor question for me?
No, good season. Really excited. How do you feel about Carolyn? Do you like her? Thumbs up or thumbs down? I feel like you might not like
her. Super entertaining.
She is incredibly authentic. Love it. She is so her. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that people should, at least, even if they don't necessarily like prefer it or like it, I think you have to respect it. Mm-hmm. Talk about that with Nick Sirianni sometimes and other people, whatever. But I'm saying, like,
you just made me like her less.
but you get what I'm saying.
I will freak out if she has like a pen in her hair.
That point aside, I just don't like the people who hate her. I get that she's not everyone's cup of tea, but at the very least, if you're saying it's a put on, it's not. Like, it's clearly not. That is who she is. And if you don't like that, that's up to you. I'm not saying you should have to like it, but I'm saying you cannot question that is like authentically her. That is very much her.
My last thing, and then we can get out of here. Kind of a general Survivor point. There are a lot of contestants on this season that have like prepped for the show. I have no problems if you want to prep, you want to do some like mind puzzles, you know what I mean? Like, you want to work on things like, you know, to kind of rack yourself and get ready. I'm like, Probst, you got to come up with some new puzzles. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just be trotting these same puzzles out to where like, you know, people can 3D print and like go to Home Depot and get the like necessary like plywood to make the puzzles and challenges in their backyard. Like, that's not fair. I mean, I understand that everybody technically has the accessibility to do that, but like you can't do that.
Everyone has a theoretical 3D printer.
Okay, well, but like everyone I forget his name, but that went to Home Depot and he said he built the thing in his backyard or whatever. Like,
not everyone has a yard.
Like, that's true too. That's a good point. So my point is, like, you got to come up with some new challenges. You know what I mean? Like, some new physical, like, can be the same in spirit and in theme. You know what I mean? Like, you want to have them balance things or hold things or put things together, whatever. I'm fine with all of that. The general theme of the game has to remain the same, but you cannot literally trot out the same exact puzzles. Now you're muddying the competition.
I don't really feel strongly about it personally, but I get the criticisms, and it's not just on Jeff. You know, there's obviously some of that might be budget stuff. And
like, Jeff's our competitor now, man. He's a podcaster now. So, I mean,
this podcast is good. People should check it out if they haven't already. I enjoy the peek behind. It's different. You know, I'm glad it's not just trying to be like another, you know, RHAP podcast, which, by the way, maybe I can send you the audio of that. I have the audio of the interview that I did with Rob back in the day with my good friend James Seltzer for BGN Radio. So I don't know if you'd actually be interested in listening, but I can send it to you and you can check it out. It's kind of fun. Really good interview. And also, just to speak to how cool of a dude that Rob Cesternino is, we had such a long talk with him before and after we recorded. I think we talked for almost like an hour before and after, not recorded at all, and just really good dude for him to take the time out. So check out Rob as a podcast, and he is a patron. If you like Survivor and you're looking to get into Survivor, I mean, you should definitely check out his stuff and help support him, because he's a good dude by all accounts, and he produces great content.
I hope you enjoy opening day, Brandon. I hope you have a brat.
TGIF, baby. Happy Friday.
Let's leave after you tell us.
That was my sign off. I already signed off.
No, happy Friday. Two random words. Go.
Happy Friday.